So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Way.
Welcome everyone to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting, and where are we, Wei?
We are in the beautiful condominium home of John Pollock.
My home.
Yeah.
Welcome, Wei. You've been here many times.
I have, yeah.
I know that you didn't notice it on the way in here, but we've put up pictures at the front.
Oh.
Featuring a Andre the Giant poster.
Oh wow. Why those pictures?
I don't know.
Okay.
Just putting them up. Decoration.
It's nice.
Yeah, thanks.
Nice job.
Speaking of nice, you have the new iPad here. Look at this.
Yes.
Got a stand with it, which I do not have with my BlackBerry Playbook.
It's actually called a smart cover.
Ooh.
Smart
cover. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Look how smart this thing is.
Wow.
I can fold it up. It's a cover, and now I can unfold it, and it's a stand. And I can lay it down this way, and it's another type of stand.
Jesus
Christ. Isn't that amazing?
Look at that.
Look at this technology. I'm probably going to get rid of it, though.
What?
Well, the stand.
Why?
I've actually...
You're getting perfect use out of it right now.
Yeah, but it's not the best case for one of these products. I was thinking of getting rid of this iPad, too. I'm not 100% satisfied with it.
This is the iPad 3, right?
Yeah.
And you're not enjoying it. You only had it, what, a week?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not really, because the typing is a big, big issue for me. I just can't get used to this typing on this keypad, this screen.
Yeah.
It makes me sound like a retard whenever I try to type a full sentence.
Well, I've got to say with the iPhone, the spell check is just terrible. Yeah. Like, it will correct words that are actual words.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone's got an iPhone, type in per diem and just watch.
Whoa.
I don't know what it changes to, but it changes that. Like if your company issues you a per diem for a trip. Let's see if this will work.
Okay, I'm going to try.
Okay, Wei is typing in per diem on his iPad. EM.
Per diet.
Per diet. Because that's what everyone... can't eat this. As per diet.
Well, so, technology, I think, still has a long way to go.
So, Wei, we got very upset last week with Nitro. The April 10th edition. Lots of feedback to that show.
A lot of feedback. And you know what? As upset as we were, it seemed to please many of you.
They enjoy when I yell and get mad, and even you get frustrated.
You were in fine form last week. Unfortunately, I don't think we'll get the same type of enthusiasm this week.
You never know, Wei. You never know what kind of emotions are going to be brought out from a show. There's been reviews I've started where I haven't really thought much of a show, and then halfway through a review, you start to have different mixed emotions.
That happens.
So this week we are reviewing the 2003 Backlash event from April the 27th of 2003 in Worcester, Massachusetts, just Worcester. Outside of Boston.
Worcester is the way you pronounce it?
Yes, Worcester.
Not Worcester.
Not Worcester. Worcester, it's Worcester.
Worcester, okay.
And this was, of course, the first pay-per-view match with Bill Goldberg, a giant monster who they debuted the night after WrestleMania to take on their top star in the April pay-per-view event. Almost a perfect blueprint here, Wade, to get us ready for Extreme Rules.
Yeah, not
Cena and Lesnar.
Not only that, but that very matchup takes place on this card as well.
I think a very relevant card to review.
Sure.
So the show starts off with a video showcasing The Rock and Bill Goldberg, and they played up Goldberg's undefeated streak on Nitro and Rock's accomplishments beating Austin, Hogan, and Kurt Angle, a name that was not part of his roll call of names this past year.
No.
I guess Kurt Angle is not on the level anymore in WWE history of a Hogan or Austin.
I never realized that, but yeah, they really have not dropped his name in a long, long time. I mean, they always talk about Flair, and the guy dressed up as Hogan last week, but Kurt Angle has made no mention of.
No, they have no, I don't, I think
I guess
they,
Jeff Hardy kind of is in that category
as
well.
Yeah, yeah. The show tonight, a joint production brought to us by Raw, SmackDown, and Castrol GTX.
I missed all this, by the way, because I was only able to watch the matches themselves. I didn't have the actual video or anything, so I was only able to catch the matches. So I hope you can fill me in on all the interstitial.
Oh, you didn't get to see all of that.
Yeah.
Oh,
fill
interesting.
Fill me in on all the backstage goodness.
Well, I thankfully had this on VHS from my storage vault. You know, I was approached by some people at Wrestle Reunion who were talking about how they thought it was amusing the way I would bring up, oh, your storage vault, as if to mean that, oh, that's just your code for downloading this. I was like, no, I really do have a storage unit with hundreds and hundreds of tapes.
He's not joking. He, as part of this condominium, he has a little storage unit downstairs, and I'm sure it is just, it's like a blockbuster.
It's packed. Yeah. It's packed to the brim. So this was brought to my viewing pleasure via VHS.
Oh, good stuff.
Now, part of this this period of Raw that I did not recall was that Jonathan Coachman was our play-by-play announcer with Jerry Lawler.
What was the story behind that?
I cannot remember, but Jim Ross called WrestleMania, and I guess they did some kind of angle. I'm thinking that it was something with Eric Bischoff where he was playing the heel GM, and I think he fired Ross. Something like that.
Right.
Because you remember for the Bad Blood show we reviewed, that's 2 months after this, they did something where Ross returns.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know. I can't remember all
of
this.
He might have been burnt. He might have been kissed somebody's ass. Or it could have been a number.
It's hard to keep track of the firings of Jim Ross over the years, both real and in storyline. And then over on SmackDown, we've got Michael Cole and Taz. And we start the show off with Team Angle coming out. Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas. And they have a portrait of Kurt Angle with gold medals around this portrait as they come out to their old track suits. And this is when Kurt Angle had undergone neck surgery after WrestleMania 19 and was out of action as Team Angle continued on without their leader.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is when he went to the non-invasive neck surgery.
Yes, and then would need more surgery by the end of this very year. So we start the show off with Team Angle defending the tag titles against Eddie and Chavo Guerrero. This is when Eddie Guerrero was just, you know, good mid-card worker, but you didn't really, they certainly were not positioning this guy as, in terms of being in the higher pack.
Not yet, but I felt like they were almost getting to that point. By this point, the Los Guerreros were baby faces, and I certainly felt that, it really seemed like the announcers, as well, were positioning Eddie as the star of the team.
Taz was so much more motivated at this point in time in his career, and it was noticeable right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I'm just... I have this extreme contrast with watching Lockdown on Sunday night, where he just feels like the most autopilot announcer.
Yep.
And back here at this point, it just seemed like he was just so much more into it. Mm-hmm. And maybe, I don't know if it's burnout. I don't know if it's the product he's calling. I mean, he has now been doing color commentary pretty much consistently since 2001.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just gotten into a mode.
I really feel like it is the product, because with SmackDown at this time, this was the good era of SmackDown with a great roster, good tag teams, good booking, and you know, but I think by a byproduct of that is good versions of Michael Cole and Taz, because I mean, you have to figure that if people put a lot of care into what they're doing, if the wrestlers are putting a lot of care into what they're doing, if the writers are putting a lot of care into what they're doing, the announcers and everybody involved would probably step their own game up too, right? I don't think you're necessarily getting that with TNA.
The match starts off. There were heel tactics here by Team Angle. They were kneeing Chavo in the kidney. There was a funny spot here where Jimmy Corderas had his back turned and Eddie got into the ring and just slapped him, did a big clap in midair to signal a tag so that when Corderas turned around, he acknowledged the tag.
Yeah, as part of their, they were turning baby faces, but they're also getting over their cheat to win gimmick as baby faces. And this was certainly the most interesting aspect of the team.
We continued onwards here. They worked over the back of Eddie Guerrero. And continue to work him over here. There was a spot where Benjamin leapfrogged over Haas onto the back of Eddie. We continued onwards here. Eddie got the hot tag to Chavo, came in, drop kicked Haas into Benjamin, and then hit a brainbuster to Charlie Haas for a two count. But Benjamin then has a power bomb, and then a missile drop kick by Eddie to Benjamin, and then he hits the Three Amigos, which at this point in his career were just a vertical suplex. Another vertical suplex. He's hit three vertical suplexes. Doesn't quite have the ring of it. We get a near fall with Chavo in there. Then Eddie hits the frog splash. Ed's the illegal man, and then Chavo climbs on top for a two count with Benjamin yanking Chavo off. It seemed that he pulled him off kind of late here. Then Eddie kind of comes in. Chavo hits a back suplex, and then Benjamin pulls his leg and holds down Haas. And it allows Haas to pin Chavo with the heel advantage here. 15:04. And then after the match, Chavo hit a plancha off of Eddie to the floor onto both Benjamin and Haas. And then they stole the titles from Team Angle and go to the back. What did you think of this match, though, after this? And then they used Tajiri and Eddie Guerrero as a tag team. So the show continues here, and they show Los Guerreros in the back with the titles. And they're talking about their grandmother and getting women tonight, as they find a lowrider that just happens to be parked in the back. And Team Angle's upset in the ring. They hold on to their portrait and they watch Los Guerreros take off with the titles in the lowrider. Tori Wilson is then talking to Test and telling him to stop calling her. It says, Stacy's my friend. And Test says not to tell her anything and calls Tori a tease for being in Playboy, but then not having sex with him. How dare you?
What a tease.
This is some flawed logic here by Test. And then Tori goes to walk away, and Test grabs her by the arm, pulls her back, and forces himself onto her.
They love that.
This was aggravated assault at its finest.
Oh, come on. That's the move.
And then they show Sable overhearing all of this, and the seeds were in motion for a dreadful show-long series of vignettes.
Uh-huh.
Roddy Piper comes out with a basket of coconuts, and then he gets on the mic and introduces the new Millennium Wrestler. Mind you, this was 2003, well into the millennium. Sean O'Hare, who had the wackiest music ever.
Remind me of how this track went.
Oh, God. Let's see if I can find it here. First of all, Sean O'Hare, a guy who I think showed, you know, promise when he was in WCW. He was one of those younger guys they pushed towards the end when not a lot of people were focusing on it. But here he was in the WWE. They gave him a series of vignettes that he did with this white backdrop, and he was talking about sins, and it was an odd character, but they were clearly had some hope for him by pairing him with Piper here, who had just returned at WrestleMania 19 as a heel.
Right.
Did this do anything for you?
I always found it to be an odd pairing. I saw nothing in common or complementary between the two. I mean, here's this Roddy Piper. Oh.
This is his theme music. This screams crowd reaction.
Sounds like any other theme.
I don't think this is the one he came out to a backlash with. The other one was more,
Okay.
It was just as odd.
Well, here we have Roddy Piper, who by all accounts should be a fan favorite, comes out to his old music, comes out to his, Scottish, kilt and all that, and then there's Sean O'Hare. I just really saw nothing in common between the two.
Sean O'Hare and Rikishi, with the storyline that Rikishi is seeking revenge from the decades-old angle between Piper and his uncle, Jimmy Snuka.
Are they legit uncle and nephew?
I don't think so.
Aren't they all related somehow?
Well, they're all close, but I don't think by blood they're all related.
Okay.
Anyway, so that was the storyline here. Rikishi attacks him on the floor, throws O'Hare into the steps and into the announce table. Into the ring, he hits a Samoan drop, and he goes for Roddy on the apron and cuts off O'Hare, eventually walks into a super kick, and then Piper attacks Rikishi with the ref's back turned, and then O'Hare hits a clothesline, a neck crank. Crowd begins to boo about something that's going on in the crowd. They completely lost everyone. I don't know if there was a fight going on or whatever, but the crowd was completely preoccupied, and this match was the victim of that. O'Hare then misses a spin kick, hits O'Hare with a splash in the corner, and then falls down in the corner, but he kicks Rikishi away, and Piper comes in with the coconut and gets knocked down right around the same time here. Piper comes in again, and he hands off the coconut to the referee. Rikishi hits Piper with the coconut, but this allows O'Hare to hit his finish, which is kind of like a version of the DDT, the DVD, and then gets the pin at 4 minutes and 55 seconds, and Piper was bleeding hard way here from the coconut shot, and Piper sold this like he was dead.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, this whole match was really built around that coconut spot, but I didn't think the reaction to it was that great when it finally happened. The match itself was pretty average.
Not really anything to this match. Very short, and Sean O'Hare gets his win. So.
And Rikishi got his revenge.
Yeah.
For his uncle.
And Sean O'Hare would fizzle out, and this was maybe the high point of his WWE run.
This was maybe a one-year millennium.
Yeah. We continue onwards. Backstage, Stacy Keibler is at catering, as this is supposed to just be like the, we're just here in the catering room as spectators, as we're just supposed to join them in mid-conversation, where the guy at catering just says, "The boys are hungry today," as he hands over a plate to Stacy with fruit on it.
I missed all this.
Didn't see any of this, so this means nothing to you.
I wish I saw that.
Sable walks in and introduces herself to Stacy, because she's just returned to the company, and tells Stacy that Tori isn't her friend, and she's after Test, and says that's how Test got an advanced copy of Playboy months ago. And Stacy thinks, oh, they must be fucking. So she says that she saw Tori kiss Test, and Stacy's acting here was just tremendous, and she doesn't know what to do, and she sells her anger by tossing her plate of celery and dip onto the floor and storms off.
Well, you know you're pissed when you're wasting food.
Yeah.
Come on.
Rob Van Dam and Kane are getting ready. Oh, I wish you saw this.
Oh, I did see this.
Oh, man. Rob Van Dam is pacing around. Look, dude, this situation, anything but cool. And they don't like the fact that Chief Morley is the referee for tonight's tag title match and says, I like being a tag team champion. And Kane then says that if they're going to be taken down, they'll take the Dudleys and Sean Morley down with them. I don't know what this meant.
This was RVD doing his best to give us exposition on his current storyline.
Yep. Informing him and Kane, we rock. We rock.
Jesus.
Situation, anything but cool.
Yeah.
RVD and Kane defending the tag titles against the Dudley boys. The
thing is, like, RVD's he's a very intelligent person if you see him speak in interviews. I mean, he has a certain sense of style of delivery that's, I guess, not too far from...
I think he would rag on these promos as much as anybody.
Yeah, these are just awful. These are just somebody looking at a guy who talks that way and thinking, What would he say? What would a caricature of this type of person say?
This is Vince envisioning what a pot smoker would sound like in everyday life between puffs.
I was confused a little when I saw this, because
all baby faces?
No. I mean just the fact that Kane is here teaming with yet another person. Yeah, I don't know if you realize, but Kane has been an 11-time tag team champion with like something like 5 different partners.
Oh, he's a likable guy.
He's very likable.
So we've got Rob Van Dam and Kane against the Dudley Boys. They're all baby faces with Chief Morley as the heel referee, representing Eric Bischoff here. And Morley plays the neutral official at the start of the match. Dudleys get the advantage on Kane after a guillotine on the top rope, and Bubba then goes for a face plant as the crowd chants for tables. Kane then comes back with a spine buster, gets a 2 count, and they double team the Dudleys, but Morley doesn't step in, and then Kane fights them off, tags in Van Dam, who hits the rolling thunder to Bubba, and then a neck breaker off the ropes by television champion D-Von, who got way more television time back in WWE. And then Kane hits a top rope clothesline to D-Von. Bubba goes for his dusty elbow, but Kane stops him, goes for a choke slam. And this is when Morley hits a low blow to Kane and signals that he is helping the Dudleys. I didn't understand this. Both were baby faces, but the heels in Bischoff and Morley had a vendetta against Kane and RVD, but not the Dudleys. Well, this wasn't explained very well.
We weren't really following the storyline. We couldn't really gather too much from just watching this, but I think they were suggesting that the Dudleys were more willing to listen to Bischoff.
Great.
The other two, I suppose. I guess just looking at this match, at this time in 2003, I never thought I would ever see the day when Bubba Ray Dudley would be a more compelling single star than Rob Van Dam on a show.
That is true. That is where we are in 2012. Finish came when RVD ducked the clothesline, and then Morley takes out Bubba. D-Von goes to attack Morley, and Lance Storm does the run-in with a springboard forearm and then takes a Bubba bomb, and then a 3D is delivered to Morley. Kane chokeslams Bubba Ray with a 5-star frog splash follow-up by Van Dam. Crowd was going nuts here towards the finish, and Van Dam pins Bubba as another official runs in to count the 3, 13 minutes and 2 seconds. I thought the crowd was really into this. I thought this match was fine.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the bulk of it was kind of dull, kind of standard. But once Morley began to interfere and they headed to the finish, the crowd really caught on.
From there, you know, business was a little down because they did their live event calendar, and the Raw crew was getting ready to hit such landmark towns as Oshawa and Kitchener, Ontario.
Don't they still work Oshawa from time to time?
Yeah, occasionally. But it's just, even at this point, very small towns for the Raw crew. Keebler is walking in the back and confronts Tori in the locker room. And Stacy walks up to Tori and calls her a bitch. And they start fighting back and forth as the women in the locker room try to separate them. And Lawler is yelling, pull her top. Pull her top off.
Yeah.
And then from there, we go to Trish Stratus against Jazz for the women's title, with Trish defending the gold. Teddy Long gets on the mic. Boy, was this great. He talks about vindication for baby girl Jazz and says, tonight, Jazz will rise above prejudice and bigotry and will win the title. You feel me, boo? And then Jazz gets on the mic and says, the bitch is back and the bitch is black. I love this combination of Teddy Long and Jazz. Jazz was one of my favorite female wrestlers of the past 15 years. I just thought she was great and never really gets her due.
Oh, she's a great wrestler, no doubt. Absolutely.
Stratus comes out and she's holding her ribs, and they show the angle from Raw where Jazz gave what was then known as the bitch clamp to Trish Stratus. Onto her front. It's kind of like a reverse tree slam. The move the Kong uses.
Right.
So Jazz attacks the ribs with shots and then a backbreaker and then hits the bitch clamp. This was my favorite named maneuver outside of Angelina Love's bitch killer. The bitch killer.
More so than the in your face.
In your face. Stratus counters, hits a suplex, gets a brief hope spot, but then Jazz takes off the middle turnbuckle pad. Stratus goes for a backslide, but the referee is tending to the turnbuckle, and then Jazz kicks out. Stratus goes for her top rope Hurricane Rana, but Jazz blocks it and jumps off into a half crab. Not an easy maneuver to pull off here, and it's reversed by Stratus, who gets the Boston Crab, and they note that they are just outside of Boston. The obligatory pop here for a maneuver named the Boston Crab. And then transitions into the STF, but Jazz gets to the ropes. Stratus hits the Stratus faction, but Teddy Long grabs his shoe and throws it at Trish Stratus to break the cover, and then he starts blaming it on a fan. Jazz goes for a small package, gets a two count, then blocks a sunset flip, and Jazz grabs the ropes and wins the match and the title at 5 minutes and 50 seconds. I thought this match was very good.
Throwing the shoe.
Priceless.
Brilliant. And then blaming it on a fan. That it's so simple, it's old school, and it's perfect.
I want this Teddy Long. This Teddy Long is sorely missed at this point. I think we've exhausted the old babyface commissioner, yeah, Teddy Long.
No, I agree with you there, but I also feel, though, that doing the racist gimmick again...
You don't have to go the full racist, but I mean, this was, I mean, very little here. I mean, but you could easily do this character without making it a kind of racial overtone gimmick.
Yeah. A very good match.
Booker T is with Shawn Michaels in the locker room, and he asks him if he's ready. And they look at Kevin Nash to see if he's ready. And he says, "Don't worry about me." This was the most unnecessary backstage vignette we needed all night.
I wish I saw it.
There was nothing to this. They all just said, "We're ready." And that's literally all of it. Next up, Big Show against Rey Mysterio. They had been building up Big Show as this monster who had been stretchering opponents out at this point. And early on, Mysterio is using big spots on Big Show. At one point, he's on the floor, and Big Show does the head palm to pull him up to the apron. And then Mysterio goes for a springboard into the arms of Big Show and then into a backbreaker. Military presses Mysterio, who lands on his feet, goes for leg kicks before Mysterio is sent to the floor. This is where he grabs a chair from underneath the ring and hits Big Show in the head as the referee had been knocked out of the way by Show, and then goes for a senton off the top for a two count. He hits two 619s, gets caught for the West Coast pop in midair, and Big Show chokeslams him, pins Ray in all of 3 minutes and 47 seconds. This was a television match.
Yeah, but I don't have a problem with the 3 minutes. This is a logical ending. A giant guy versus a little small guy. I mean, absolutely, I had no problem with this. And it was all about the post-fight.
The post-match, the EMTs come out to put Mysterio on a stretcher, and they put him on the long board. They strap him up to the board, and then Big Show returns, picks up the stretcher with Mysterio attached to it.
Picks it up like as if it was a steel chair or something light.
And rams this stretcher into the steel post and just lets go. This was the most violent landing. This was just... I hated this. This was so careless. And Mysterio had... He could do nothing to cushion his fall because his arms and legs were strapped to this and landed right on his head. Mm-hmm. I hated this. I thought this was just such a stupid spot, and it was just so careless. Mysterio just dropped like his head looked like a grape when it hit the floor.
Mm-hmm. It looked very rough, and if he didn't have a mask on, I'm sure we'd see some type of marking. If
this was just unbelievable.
But hey, it looked great. It did a lot.
Oh, sure, it looked great.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was... It was well done for the angle that it was supposed to be.
I remember right after this, Edge did an interview on Off the Record, and this came up, and he just railed on this. He thought it was terrible that they did this. It was unprofessional, Big Show, and I don't know. I don't know really. This was the spot that was planned. I mean, I don't know how much you could do if you're Big Show to protect this. I think it was just a stupid setup here with Mysterio having no use of his arms to cushion his fall or protect himself in any way. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't a big fan of this.
This would eventually lead to a stretcher match between Brock and Big Show, with Brock trying to seek revenge for Rey.
Lillian Garcia is then in the back with Triple H, Ric Flair, and Chris Jericho. Hunter calls it the all-time great team. And Jericho says it's the most dangerous team ever. And he did this really over-the-top voice. It was very campy-like. And then Flair cuts a promo on Booker. And when he finishes, Lillian just walks off. And they all look at her. And they're like, get back here. We're not done. And Lillian just puts the mic back in. And Hunter says, we'll wrap this segment up when I say we wrap it up. And it was just hilarious. Lillian thought the segment was over. Yeah. And Hunter pretty much said nothing. He just wanted to continue.
Not the guy you necessarily want to screw up with in front of on live TV.
Nope. Hunter doesn't forget these things. And then we'll give you names on television and make fun of you.
Wow.
Keebler and Wilson continue to fight in the backstage area. Keebler gets thrown into a production box. And this container falls and lands on her head, and she's out. And Scott Steiner walks in to check on her and just lifts her up into his arms and walks to the trainer's room. But then Test walks in, and he's pissed off, saying, what's going on here? What are you doing with my girlfriend? And this was the start of the Test-Scott Steiner feud.
Great.
Lovely. They plug the song for Backlash. It is Remedy by Cold, which Michael Cole notes, the song is kicking. Remedy.
Remedy by Cold, right?
From their album Year of the Spider.
All right.
That is not on the the Chinese calendar, is it? The Year of the Spider? Is that?
No.
No?
No.
Video on Brock Lesnar here. Injuring John Cena months ago with an F5 to the steel post, and then all of Cena's raps during his rehab process that really kind of separated him at that point and kind of gave him his identity on SmackDown. And it was during this whole series of promos, I think, that Cena started to gain momentum, and then it led to a television tournament with the winner getting the title shot at this event, and Cena defeated Eddie Guerrero, The Undertaker, and Chris Benoit
via fluke victory.
Yes, yes.
I mean, Cena is still, at this time, is seen very much as a mid-card type of heel.
And the final angle was a belt shot to Brock Lesnar that bloodied him. It looked like it opened up Lesnar hard way. And that was the build-up for this match.
How seriously would you say, going into this pay-per-view, how seriously was Cena taken as a challenger?
I think very, very little. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone was expecting a title change.
He didn't have a match at Mania. He did that rap on Fabulous and Jay-Z. But I suppose right afterwards, this was really the beginning of his stellar year.
Yeah, yeah. They would keep him as a heel for at least another 6 months, and then they'd start to flip him over as a babyface at that point. But this was the beginning of the push for Cena in its infancy. Cena comes out, and I guess they were maybe concerned that, you know, his gimmick is getting over. He's from Boston, so they put him in a Yankees jersey and a Yankees hat. Mm-hmm. And it sounded like he was battling laryngitis here. Did you hear him on this rap? His voice sounded really, really hoarse. And he does his rap and lists a bunch of different former WWF champions, including Bruno Sammartino. He says he's iron like the Sheik. He's lost his mind like Mankind. And says, I'm straight. You're Dude Love. So get off the cactus, Jack.
It's clever.
And he gets into the ring for his final line, and the microphone dies. And it just ends with some dick joke.
Oh, I must have seen like an edited version.
Oh, his mic died, and he just threw it away and got another mic and just said something about his dick. And then the crowd's chanting, Yankees suck. And Lesnar comes out with a bandage on his forehead. And the match begins. Lesnar overpowers him. It's a backbreaker, fall-away slam. I think at this point, really, like, Brock was very good when he was in there with guys at or above a certain level. And this was the first time Brock was in a position where he kind of had to carry things mm-hmm. here and work as a babyface. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of problems here. And the match began. They built up to... They got to the floor. Lesnar got tossed into the steps. This is where his bandage came off and he was bleeding. Cena had the heat until he ran into a spine buster, and then Cena was using lots of rest spots, including a rear choke. The crowd then started chanting for Cena. And if you just looked at the visual here, I mean, here is John Cena, the guy from Boston. He's got a gimmick that a certain part of the crowd was getting into. And it was almost like he was working part of this match as the babyface. Like, just the visual here of these two.
I didn't notice that.
Well, because I wasn't surprised that Cena got chance here. This was the problem was they were getting Let's Go Cena chance. Mm-hmm. I just think in a match like this, Brock to me just is not as, I don't know, just doesn't work. He's this overpowering babyface, even next to Cena, who's a very big guy, but contrasted to Lesnar, you don't get that.
I felt it to be an absolute problem when Cena had the advantage and Brock was selling.
Yeah.
Brock was selling big time here for a guy that I don't think anybody believes to be dominant enough to be able to, you know, break down a Brock Lesnar and have him bleed and put him in a rear chokehold for, I don't know, it felt like 5 minutes.
The one near fall they really got into was when Lesnar got thrown into the corner, almost took out the referee, but stopped, and then Cena hit him with a low blow and went for the cover, and Lesnar kicked out at two, and the crowd popped for that near fall. Very big. Lesnar then got hit by a neck breaker. Cena then gets rammed into the corner and goes for his chain. And as he goes to punch Lesnar with his chain, the all-powerful Brian Hebner puts his arm up and stops John Cena's arm. And this leads to Cena losing the chain. And then Lesnar hits him with the F5 out of nowhere and pins Cena. 15 minutes and 14 seconds these two went. I didn't think this match was anything special. And I'm hoping we get a lot better next week.
Not a great match. A little sloppy at times. And at this point, Cena's inexperience definitely showed. We're dealing with the John Cena at this point that had
the 2003 Cena.
That had an even more limited moveset and a more basic moveset than what we have right now. I mean, in 9 years' time, I'm sure he's gotten a lot better. The other question, though, how is Brock going to be his first match back with all that layoff?
Yeah, that's going to be a very interesting. I don't know. That match is to me, it's a very easy one to book. But the more I'm thinking about it, the more problems that just come out of that. But we should save that discussion for a show. That's
right. Regardless, though, of the booking, I felt like Brock's physical charisma really stood out, as it always does in his matches. So I hope that that'll still come across when he wrestles Cena this time.
From there, we go to a video for the six-man tag built around Kevin Nash's return to save Shawn Michaels from Hunter, Flair, and Jericho. And then on TV, they teased Nash aligning with Hunter. They went into the musical montage where we got more of Remedy. And mistrust amongst the babyface team of whether they could all trust Nash, and included this crazy sound effect when Hunter low-blowed Nash on television. And that set up the six-man Raw main event. No title match from Raw on this pay-per-view. And then they started to plug their next pay-per-view will be Judgment Day, taking place in 3 weeks on May the 18th. And then they announce tickets for Judgment Day go on sale next weekend.
Really?
2 weeks before the pay-per-view, tickets go on sale.
That can't be right.
That was right. That's what was on there.
Well, I mean, they must have maybe released them early, but maybe saw that.
Maybe it was a week walk-up, or a week advance, because they were not only plugging tickets on sale, but Ric Flair would be at the box office in Charlotte.
Huh.
So you're probably right, actually. That makes a lot of sense.
It just seems crazy to me that they would give 2 weeks.
Triple H and Chris Jericho and Ric Flair teaming up to take on Kevin Nash, Shawn Michaels, and Booker T. The backdrop here, Triple H and Kevin Nash, longtime friends coming to fight.
That was certainly the main feud that was being pushed of the six men here. Nash gets the last entrance even, and oh, Jesus, I don't know how. Well, I do know how, but Kevin Nash keeps... This was 2003, by the way, after we had known Kevin Nash's limitations, after we had known how unfitting he was, at least amongst these people. Like, of these six people, a 53-year-old Ric Flair included, Kevin Nash is by far the weakest in-ring performer.
You know what this reminded me of was the Lethal Lockdown match this past Sunday, where you had all these workers in the ring, but the whole focus was to build up to Garrett and Eric. And when you finally got to that finish of the match, I thought the match was okay. It wasn't anything great, but the finish, no one cared about. And it was all built up for Garrett, who is the least over of everyone in the ring. And that's what this was. It was, this whole match was designed to put Kevin Nash over as the next big babyface challenge for Hunter. And you're right. Like, you're putting him in there next to Booker T and even more so Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
That's the last match I wanted to see out of any combination here. I would rather see Hunter and Jericho, Flair, Michaels, and Booker before Nash. Mm-hmm. That would be the last option I would want of Hunter opponents. All the guys just trading spots in the early bit. Michaels hits Flair with the sweet chin music around the six-minute mark, but then Hunter runs in with the pedigree. Jericho works with Michaels, and they were just coming off that huge match at WrestleMania. So that, to me, was the more interesting combination here. Was here's you get to see these two after that great match at WrestleMania in the ring again. Mm-hmm. Hunter came in, wrapped Michaels' leg around the post, and he would sell his knee throughout the match. They built up to Michaels hot tagging Kevin Nash.
You know, the initial reaction was good because they did a good job building the anticipation for Nash to come out. But once he started wrestling, that reaction just died.
His big spots where he scoop slammed each heel and then clotheslined Ric Flair to the floor. No one was into Nash here.
He's just so slow in comparison to every one of these people.
And at a time when WWE main events were at such a high level of, in terms of fan expectation, mm-hmm. that it was just, this was not 1992 where you could take a guy and hide him. This was a very work rate heavy main event core, with Hunter, with Angle, with Jericho, with Benoit, with Lesnar. I mean, this was an expectation you had built up for years at this point that you can't just seamlessly put in Nash and hide him. Nash blocked a faceplant by Jericho. Hunter then went for a pedigree, but Nash back body drops him, goes for the jackknife, but Jericho stops him with a missile dropkick. Booker takes everyone out, goes for a spinaroony, and then gets tossed to the floor. Jericho hits a bulldog to Michaels, and then Flair applies a figure four to Michaels, and Jericho hits a lion salt while Michaels is still in the hold. That looked cool. And then Nash clears the announce table, goes to jackknife Hunter, but sees Michaels is in trouble, runs in. We see Ric Flair tossed by Nash into Nick Patrick. It looked really weak. And then Nash powerbombs Jericho, and this allows Hunter to run in with a sledgehammer, hit Nash, and Hunter pins Nash at 17 minutes and 52 seconds.
I thought it was a good match. Unfortunately, Nash's parts definitely dragged it down, but otherwise, Michaels and everybody else made this match very good, I thought.
I would have thought that it would have made more sense to me that if you're building up Nash, could he have not pinned Hunter here in the six-man, as opposed to Hunter getting the win, that sets up a title match.
This is Triple H in a main event with Triple H booking the main.
This was in his finest year of 2003.
Yeah, well, you just had that Booker feud, right?
That is true, yes. Cole and Taz give us an update on Mysterio. He's been taken to a local trauma center. And his vitals are good.
I thought Cole and Taz did a good job selling this. It was a
Taz did the taking the glasses off. The seriousness. All these cliches. They have a preview of the main event with the video of Goldberg's debut from the night after WrestleMania. And Rock calling Goldberg. He said, "You were a big fish in a small pond, while The Rock is a whale inside of a teardrop."
All right. Wow, how poetic.
A whale inside of a teardrop. Mm-hmm. I guess the WWE is a teardrop. Terry is that... Oh, you did not see the promo, did you?
I actually did.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I think this was horrible.
Yeah.
This, to me, was the worst setup for this match. And yes, I'm going to rag on the comedy, but there was a worse outcome than just my personal distaste. Terry is with The Rock, says that a lot of people think Goldberg is going to beat The Rock. And Rock is just... Like, you could clearly tell he had a lot of fun playing this heel character, but to me, it was so pronounced that it was impossible to not be entertained by this guy. Unless you were annoyed by it.
I count me in as one of the people that were annoyed and not entertained. Because, again, we've reviewed a couple episodes from Rock's run of this era in recent months. And this is the Rock that I think is the Rock at his worst. Because this is a stuttering Rock that just tries too hard to be funny. Throws out all these John Cena type of
this was a
jokes.
John Cena promo.
And the way he delivers his promos, he's just like... talking like me right now, just like, hey, you know.
The Rock needs to make a white baby.
He's stuttering. He's not controlled. He doesn't have the confidence that we've seen of his recently, of his back in the late 90s. This is just The Rock that I was not a fan of.
Yeah, he talks to Terry about he's done everything except make a white baby as he gives eyes to Terry. He does all these stupid faces mocking Goldberg. And he says for the people that think he'll lose, he tells those people to wipe a cockatoo's ass with what they think and calls Goldberg a whisker biscuit bald-headed bitch. And this ends with the entire audience chanting Rocky. This was a horrible, horrible setup. I hated the comedy. This was supposed to be a big, big dream match. And I think at the time, the TV had already devalued it, where people were really interested after night one, and each week, it just got subsequently less interest.
Was this part of the build when they put the wig on Bill Goldberg?
I think so. I think, yeah, the wig was before this. Just really, really awkward. And the crowd here, they were into The Rock. It was very obvious. So The Rock comes out. Goldberg has his new theme music, which a lot of people complained about at the time. Now, I can't remember. Was there some legal issue with the theme music?
I think we...
Because some people brought that up on the message board.
We've discussed this before, and I remember looking up and finding that his WCW theme music was actually from somewhere else. It wasn't created in-house in WCW, so you could understand why they chose not to use it.
Well, the new theme music, I believe this was the first time he came out to that theme music.
Not even on TV?
I could be wrong. I know his debut night, he had the old music. Mm. It might have changed on TV, but just didn't have the same...
You know what it is? Like, they try to capture they rip off the initial part of the melody and everything. And so the whole time, like, I'm listening to it, I'm just waiting for the actual song to kick in. It just felt like they just looped the beginning of the original melody, and then you never really get to the part where that you want it to.
All right. Very long stalling here. I think the ring announcer, or the timekeeper, forgot to ring the bell, so they're just standing there for like 2 minutes.
I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, and then Rock walked over and he signaled, ring the bell.
Oh,
and that's when they finally rang it. So it was just this long stall. They started off with Goldberg overpowering The Rock, sent him to the floor. The Rock teases leaving, and then the referee gets up to an 8 count, and Rock is not coming back in the ring. So Goldberg, from the inside of the ring, leans over the top rope, and the ref starts a new count. Mm-hmm. So that can break a count, folks. Rock runs in, clotheslines Goldberg, and plays this up as a huge accomplishment. And then Goldberg comes back, and he hits a rock bottom to The Rock, sets him up for a spear, but misses and runs shoulder first into the post. And this would start Goldberg selling the shoulder throughout the match. And right there, those words, throughout the match. Something that, listen, Goldberg, no one is ever going to confuse this guy with Kurt Angle. Okay, he is not. You know exactly what you're getting with this guy. But the company said, well, that's not how we do things in WWE. All right, cool. We'll do this instead. So the match continues. Rock applies a sharpshooter, but Goldberg reaches the ropes. He then hits a spear to The Rock. Both are selling now. Rock comes back with a spear and does a kip-up to a big pop from the audience, who is loving this. Then he hits a rock bottom to Goldberg for a near fall, and the crowd boos as Goldberg kicks out. This, to me, would be worst-case scenario in that realm at this point.
The more I think about it, I mean, when was the last time The Rock had a run as a heel, aside from this?
This was it.
And before this, what was that?
Before?
Yeah.
He had never been when he was with The Nation. Yeah, and the corporation.
But in that time, I mean, he was always getting cheered. I really don't know if he is capable of working as a true heel anymore.
He's a person that people just love this guy.
Well, and all his gimmicks are geared towards getting a reaction, a baby face reaction. So without any of that stuff, I really don't know if he can.
He's a lot like what Ric Flair has been for like the last 10 years, mm-hmm. where the guy just wants to be a heel, but nobody has real hatred for Ric Flair.
Yeah.
It's just not possible. Hits a spinebuster to Goldberg, then hits the people's elbow for another pop, but Goldberg kicks out, more boos. Goldberg gets back to his feet, and Rock slowly staggers to his feet, turns around, gets hit with another spear, and then Goldberg hits the jackhammer for the win. 13 minutes and 4 seconds, and the crowd gets behind him here, at least for the finish with the jackhammer. To me, it was just... Listen, Rock was done after tonight. He would not be back until WrestleMania the next year. And this, to me, it was just... This is everything you want to avoid with Brock Lesnar this year, where it's just, to me, it was just Goldberg just felt flat by the end of this match. And this was not the Goldberg people want to see. Goldberg, he's a very one-dimensional character. And I think, like, if you want to convert him to WWE style, he is not conducive to doing a 15-20-minute WWE main event match.
Yeah.
And what got him over was quick and decisive wins.
But and, that, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, and this just to me is a hell of an argument that if this is the way they're going to book Lesnar Cena, I think there's a novelty to Lesnar just coming back, and you put him in a match with someone that is mid-card to high mid-card, and you murder the guy.
Absolutely.
And then you go to Cena. Yeah. Instead, we're starting so high up that I don't see them just blowing through Cena like that, which would be, I think, a great way to start him off, but I just cannot fathom them doing that. And instead, we're going to Cena right away, where this is my fear of where Lesnar is going to feel flat after this. It took Goldberg, the only times he got over during that year was when they booked him to either kill a guy on TV, which was very rare, and that SummerSlam, where he murdered everybody and then lost to Hunter, where... things flattened out. I think so much can be learned by going back and rewatching Bill Goldberg in 2003 to apply to Brock Lesnar.
You can point out some differences, though, between that and this Brock Lesnar-Cena feud. And that's, I mean, The Rock, is, as we mentioned, is a very beloved person, beloved character. And I don't necessarily think Goldberg was over to the extent that people were going to turn on The Rock in favor of Goldberg. Whereas here you have John Cena that much of the audience already dislikes and much of Brock Lesnar's fan base hates. So I think you can... I don't think you'll get the same reaction. I think especially in a Chicago crowd, you're going to get probably a 90% pro-Lesnar crowd.
I hope so. Have you seen Brock's new ring gear?
No.
Oh, he's,
why? Where did this come out?
This is, WWE posted this.
Okay.
They have all their profiles.
Is it different from what,
yep.
What it used to be? Let's bring it up and...
Okay, we'll get Wei's reaction, because I'm sure most of you listening to this have seen it, so you know what it looks like.
That's not one of their photos, is it?
Yeah, WWE.com. Well, so he's got the fighter shorts with MMA gloves and then his old wrestling boots.
The wrestling boots are definitely a little out of place.
Yeah. But he should have, like, wrestling boots. Like, legit, like, amateur wrestling boots, maybe.
Yeah. Even that would maybe look a little odd, but...
Those boots need to be changed.
Yes. Yes, they do. It just looks a bit strange. I am glad to see, though, that they are... going to be portraying him as an MMA fighter and not just a rehash of his original pro wrestling persona. Although I wouldn't have minded if we saw him as in his original wrestling gear as well.
I like the change. I like the fact that if you're going to portray this guy as, you know, he's the most legitimate guy in the WWE, that you're portraying him as coming from a different world. If you're going to play up this UFC stuff, then play it up. I'm fine with
the difference. But can he back it up with the style that represents that in the ring?
I think you could. I think that's an easier way to book him than doing a typical wrestling match.
But he's going to need to run ropes. He's going to need to do stuff on the outside. Like that, what I mean is, like,
I don't know.
He's extremely limited if he's only going to wrestle a UFC style, and which leads me to think that he will be doing things like an F5, things like, I don't know, running the ropes. And is that going to look odd?
To me, if you give him that style, though, that's almost going against what you're positioning him as within the company.
But you need to have a good match. You need to let this guy go out there and be able to do what he needs to do to have a good match.
I've seen plenty of great matches without guy. I mean,
but is Brock Lesnar somebody who's capable of doing like a Samoa Joe Kurt Angle type of match?
That's a question. It's a big question. Maybe he needs to go work with Josh Barnett and sure. Harry Smith
yeah.
and Finlay.
Yeah, some Carl
there's
Botch.
A there's an argument for Finlay to be back right now, to yeah. be Lesnar's personal agent.
Absolutely.
Finlay would be great.
What did you think of this show overall?
I liked the show. It wasn't a great show. There wasn't really a match that really blew me away on this show. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it I'm going to go just under 4.5 out of 10 because I really think Goldberg, I think this hurt him more than helped him.
Right. I give this a 5 out of 10. As you mentioned, match-wise, quality I thought was slightly below most of the, especially the SmackDown shows at the time. But there were a lot of big names on the show, and you got to see Rock versus Goldberg at the end of this, so I can't really complain.
All right, let's head to feedback way, and we'll start off here with David. Duffenberg. And David writes, what a way for Goldberg to start his WWE run. Wait, what happened again? Two of the biggest names in wrestling during this time period, and you have to struggle to remember what happened? All I remembered for this build was The Rock saying he quit on Raw and out comes Goldberg. All the rest was as unmemorable as the match. Pretty much summed up the Goldberg run. I do remember being happy they didn't hotshot a Cena title run on the show. After Brock tried to break his face the month prior, I was afraid Cena would take the belt so Brock can heal. Boring show. Now time to forget about it once again.
Peppers. After WrestleMania 19 was one of the best pay-per-views of all time, this show is a major letdown. It's got its share of memorable moments, but there were too many matches that are booked and performed as if they were on television, especially on the Raw side. They leaned hard on the main event being enough to sell the show, but they should have known Goldberg wasn't capable of a match good enough to save a mediocre night. This was less a fallout from WrestleMania than it was a treading water and putting places in place for the next few weeks. 5 out of 10.
Coming off of WrestleMania 19, fans everywhere were bewildered with the pay-per-view following it. While 19 was such a great show, Backlash 2003 was not. I remember Los Guerreros versus Team Angle being good, with the main event being a huge letdown. Show and Mysterio was everything you would expect it to be. The six-man tag seemed like a huge cluster to me, with Nash really looking out of place. I like Brock versus Cena. Maybe that's just me. In 2012, now that we're getting Brock Cena the pay-per-view after Mania, it's interesting to watch. The build-up to the pay-per-view seemed better than the actual pay-per-view, especially with the main event. Goldberg versus Rock, in all honesty, if you were expecting anything better out of them, why? Rock had been doing Hollywood, and Goldberg was still green, even though he had been wrestling for 6 years. I rate it higher than a lot of people with a 6 out of 10 because of Brock and Cena.
Hey, John and Lee, greetings from an Englishman in China. I love listening to your podcast out here, but haven't been able to leave feedback before thanks to the great firewall of China blocking Facebook.
Oh, there we go. We've overcome Facebook.
But with this new forum, I can join in on the fun. I remember watching this pay-per-view live. I was a huge fan of the Hollywood Rock heel character, and his promo before the main event was my highlight of the show. His reaction to hearing the crowd chant his name was hilarious. Other highlights included what looked like a heavy box falling on Stacy Keibler's head after her catfight with Tori. It seems that was what led to the fantastic Scott Steiner versus Test feud. Yes, I'm being sarcastic. I remember Big Show murdering Rey Mysterio on the ring post as he was strapped onto the stretcher. This spot is memorable as it looked so brutal that I'd never seen it before. The opening match between Los Guerreros and Team Angle was probably my favorite of the night. Eddie was really becoming a big star at the time. The crowd were loving him. Chavo less so. Brock Lesnar vs. Cena was interesting to watch from today's point of view, but in no way a classic. Lots of rough spots and brawling on the outside. However, I'm looking forward to their match at Extreme Rules, and like you guys, I hope it's a quick match. The other matches did nothing for me, really. However, I am a fan of jazz and her awesome theme music. I give this pay-per-view a 6 out of 10, nothing too offensively bad. On a side note, I traveled from China to Miami last month and attended WrestleMania 28. I think that might make me the person who traveled furthest to WrestleMania this year.
We go from China to Germany with our next bit of feedback here. Hey guys, my first review. The opening video showed that the only match to care about was going to be Rock and Goldberg. It was an okay video, but I liked the WCW commentary in it. By the way, was it even possible for Goldberg to reach 172-0? Well, yes, it did become a work number after a number. He goes on to say, both tag team title matches were good, but I thought RVD and Kane versus the Dudleys was much more entertaining. The first one lacked some more high spots, if you ask me, and Eddie seemed to be the only one getting some kind of a reaction. Is it just me, or did Taz say turd instead of Kurt when referring to Kurt Angle at one point? Did they really have nobody else to push than Sean O'Hare at this time? I like the idea of Piper being a mentor of somebody, but this was just an odd pairing. The match was kind of awkward, too, with some of the spots being unnecessary or just badly timed. Funny stink face spot, though. Did you see the cat running around in the women's locker room? The whole Tess, Tori, Stacy stuff is really annoying, but I guess they need this stuff on pay-per-views.
Why? Do they?
No, I agree. And why would they cut away at the end of the next segment when Tess and Stacy are finally face-to-face? And why do I care so much? Chaz saying that the bitch is black made me laugh, and it's always refreshing seeing Teddy Long, who doesn't seem to age as something else other than a general manager. Some good stuff by the women in this match, and I totally forgot how much better their matches were in those days. And finally, he says, overall, it can be said that this pay-per-view had it very tough to deliver after that great WrestleMania month prior. There was so much that I would call great. My favorites were the Raw Tag Title match, Mysterio show, and even the women's match. The rest was okay and nothing special. 5 out of 10.
Zach Volk, it's crazy for me to look at the talent level at this time on the roster compared to today. At the same time, this pay-per-view was somewhat underwhelming to me and looked better on paper. I was never a Goldberg fan, and to me, The Rock isn't the type of worker that can carry a match. He needs at least a competent worker in there with him to avoid a snooze fest. The rest of the card was above average, and I enjoyed it mainly because at least this card was filled with wrestlers you cared about, something that is sorely lacking in the current product. Also, this was back when it felt like there were still tons of different characters. Today, so many wrestlers in the WWE look almost exactly alike and have bland gimmicks and no charisma. I give the show a 7 out of 10.
Over to Scotland. Even though John Cena is a complete gimp now, is really liking his stuff in 2003, mainly his raps on Lesnar, and then later in the year with Undertaker. The rapper thing doesn't age well, no. But I always took the whole thing as tongue-in-cheek anyway, so I didn't mind it at the time. It's funny to think that Cena got his finisher through this feud by trying to get to Lesnar by copying his finisher, to an extent. I was super, super excited when I heard Goldberg had signed with WWE. Not so much after this event, though. The exact same is probably going to happen with Lesnar this year. Average pay-per-view, 5 out of 10.
Patrick McFadden, Backlash. Fantastic. Someone mentioned that WrestleMania 19 marked the end of the Attitude Era. If that was the death, then surely this show was a period of mourning afterward. This show was just a mess. This was a period of time where you had separate brands but shared pay-per-views, which, to me at least, made this card some completely scattershot. This was also the period where there were no secondary titles. The Intercontinental Championship had been unified with Triple H's World Heavyweight Championship, and the US title was still a few months away from being resurrected. While you don't want an oversaturation of belts as to make them meaningless, you still need a second-tier title for the mid-card. Otherwise, you get shows like Backlash all the time, and nobody wants that. I remember watching this and seeing a huge disconnect between the SmackDown and Raw main events. On the SmackDown side, we see Brock Lesnar and Cena, which I found completely tolerable. Cena was completely overmatched here, and Brock no-sold for most of it, but what I found refreshing was that Cena was there at all. With Cena winning the tournament leading up to Backlash, with the likes of Eddie, Big Show, Ray, Benoit, and Undertaker, it showed us that they were willing to take chances and showcase new talent in the title picture. And as green as Cena was, I found it to be far more entertaining than anything Raw had to offer. On the Raw side of things, we have Triple H teaming with Flair and Jericho, taking on HBK, Booker T, and Nash as the Clique explodes again. And Rock and Goldberg was fantastic, but for the wrong reasons. The Rock made this event a lot of fun to watch, but he's the heel. His pre-match interview with Terry Runnels was great, so good that you heard the crowd begin a Rocky chant, which he acknowledges and rewards with an even more over-the-top behavior. The problem with The Rock is that he was so good and so entertaining as a heel, it would take someone as charismatic as an Austin or a Hogan to counter that. Goldberg was completely out of his league as a face, and it made it impossible to get behind him. The show wasn't terrible, but it wasn't good. It was a complete throwaway pay-per-view, but it showed us that while it was still business as usual over at Raw, SmackDown was rife with potential. This was further evidenced when, a few months later, the pay-per-views became brand-exclusive, and Raw's first outing gave us Bad Blood, while SmackDown gave us Vengeance.
Alan Gaynor writes, the Big Show Rey Mysterio match is one that always comes to mind when I think of this show. Show was being booked like a monster at this time, which lasted until he got doused with feces later that year. That's not a comment about the writing at the time. He literally was doused with feces on SmackDown. But back to Big Show and Rey. I enjoyed their match here and another one they had in 2005 on TV. Not sure why they have never done a longer program or maybe even put the tag titles on them. The only other memorable part of the show is the main event. I've always enjoyed Goldberg. He was limited in there for sure, but aside from a few bouts with Sid, his matches were never boring. Even though his WWE matches were a bit longer, I didn't think they dragged on, and particularly was entertained by this one against The Rock. Goldberg had an intense physical charisma that is yet to be matched by any of the clones we've seen since Crimson.
I think you could argue that Brock was somewhat of a clone of Bill Goldberg, or at least he had comparisons to Goldberg.
I think Lesnar was much more well-rounded than Goldberg.
But in terms of physical charisma,
I agree.
Think Lesnar has that. Our next review. I remember this pay-per-view specifically that the Rock promo before his match with Goldberg was really a far cry from the Rock we used to have. At this point, he was Hollywood Rock, and I wasn't really a big fan of that version. Rock, as the comedian, jock, and people's champion, were always his peak. In this promo, his timing was all off. He way over-exaggerated the wrong parts. He rambled on nonsensically, whereas the Rock of years past was clear, concise, and to the point. And we started to see the disturbing trend of take 2 to 3 funny-sounding words and throw in a swear word at the end. Hence, we got the painful part of him calling Goldberg a whisker biscuit bald-headed bitch, just a precursor to Kung Pao bitch, which is just as bad. What did Rock exactly decide along the line that this was funny? I thought this promo really showcased how far The Rock had fallen from his former glory, and I find it almost unwatchable. 97 to 2002 was Rock's promo career for me. Beyond that, this is, for the most part, pretty sad by his standards.
And we'll finish off with Kevin Perales. I remember this show somewhat well. Wanted to watch the DVD before I left my feedback, but didn't have the time. The memory starts when Goldberg was announced on WrestleMania 19 to appear at Backlash. That was all the info my two friends and I needed to make the trip from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania to the Centrum Center in Worcester. We got into the city and some time to kill before the show, so we stopped at the local mall, and what a mall it was. It consisted of closed or vacant storefronts and a food court with 2 or 3 places to eat. While walking through the mall, we did notice that Jerry Lawler and some young blonde girl were walking around. We thought about going to talk to him, but we noticed we would start marking out with her whenever people started getting close to him. What a prick, I thought. We then moved on to the show, which was a fun experience. Steiner went from world title matches on pay-per-view in January and February to battling Rico on Sunday Night Heat in April. What a fall for the genetic freak. The opening tag match with Team Angle and the Guerreros was good. I remember being pumped for the reintroduction of Sean O'Hare and thinking he could be a top star. Boy, was I wrong. His match with Rikishi wasn't bad from what I remember, but it didn't lead to anything either. I don't remember anything about the World Tag Title match other than the fans playing with a beach ball during the Dudley's entrance. Then as Bubba was on the second rope posing, the beach ball came within 15 to 20 feet of him, and he looked pissed. I remember it was visible on the live pay-per-view, but the angle was changed for the DVD. I was in the concession area for the Trish Jazz match, so I didn't get to see that title change. Show and Mysterio will always be remembered for Show swinging Rey like a baseball bat into the ring post. I felt so bad for Rey because he had no way to protect his face, and he went down with his upper body hitting first. I hope he got a good payday for that one. Cena then came out with his Yankees jersey, and I actually thought there was a chance he would leave with the title. He didn't and went to the opening 6-man tag the next month on Judgment Day. Nobody could have guessed that he'd be the top guy 2 years later. The 6-man tag was okay, I suppose. I don't remember a lot other than Triple H in purple and Jericho doing his little boxing shuffle during his entrance. The main event was great for what it was. Goldberg came in and basically sent Rock on his way to Hollywood. He'd be back for WrestleMania 20, but this was his last singles match until a few years ago. Overall, a good show to see live, probably not the same sentiment had by someone who only watched on TV or the dreaded DVD which featured the redubbing of a lot of theme songs. Booker T, Ric Flair, Rob Van Dam, Kane, the Dudleys, and Sean O'Hare all had their music changed. I always wondered why WWE would bother using music if they're not going to foot the bill to sell it.
I wonder why some of those guys needed their music changed. Rob Van Dam, what?
Rob Van Dam had it was an outside band that did it. It's that one of a kind song. That wasn't an in-house
theme. Yeah, but that theme he's always had, and it was based off of that was on that Forcible Entry song.
I don't know. There had to have been a reason why they had to redub it on DVD for a lot of these guys. They had they just didn't want to pay the royalties to sell them on DVD.
Okay.
Oh well. So that wraps us up for this week, folks. Thanks to everyone for your feedback. We have moved over now. We're on the message board, so that's where we're taking all of our feedback from now on at lawradio.proboards.com. You can sign up there for free, and every week we will be posting a thread to put feedback in for our reviews, including next week. And what will we be reviewing next week, Wei?
I don't know.
It's your pick.
Wasn't this my pick?
No, I picked this one.
But you picked the one last week.
Oh, yeah. How did that work out? I guess this one was like a joint selection. Well, I'm letting you pick for next week, Wei. So thankfully, we taped this in advance, so this is going to be a seamless decision you're making when you're likely going to have to think of something.
No. I will think of something right at this moment, and we are going to pick for next week.
What do you feel like reviewing? What promotion do you want to review?
Well, we've done WCW, we've done WWE,
Do you want to do some ECW? Do you want to do,
Is there anything notable from ECW in the month of April? You know what? Let's go to the thread. Let's go to, because we actually have a thread up there.
Go to the thread and see what people want.
Where people are making requests. The official review away request thread. And
this is the people power era.
People power era, that is correct. Well, somebody is requesting that we review Monster Brawl, which is a movie that we watched. And
It's been too small a time since I watched that. I don't need to watch it again. Okay. Sorry.
A lot of reviews for TNA. I don't know if I have the stomach for
that. That's fair enough, Wei.
All right. Did we... what about this one? Did we do this one before? Nope. Okay. A request from Irish Hand Grenade suggests...
Marcus Davis?
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, he listens.
Yeah. Suggests that we review Backlash 2006 featuring the McMahons versus Shawn Michaels and God.
And God is going to join us on the podcast next week for an exclusive interview via Skype in heaven.
Good stuff.
Wherever God lives these days. So that's going to be coming up next week, Backlash 2006. Sean and God versus Vince and Shane. How could we not be more excited for this one? So that's going to be coming up next week as we round out our reviews for April. And actually, I don't even know how many till whenever April goes. But whatever, next week, 2006 Backlash. That one should be a lot of fun. In the meantime, folks, you can always check out the latest news at liveaudiowrestling.com. Our message board is free to sign up, lawradio.proboards.com. You can also type in reviewaway.com, and that'll take you right to the message boards. You can follow Wei on Twitter at Wei0937, at Law Radio as well. And we will be back with Review and Impact on Friday, where Nate's going to give us his thoughts on lockdown. And Sunday night, actually, I wanted to mention Saturday night, we're going to have a UFC 145 post-show on TSN Radio right after Jones and Evans for the light heavyweight title. And then, of course, Sunday night on The Law. So that's it for us. And I guess we need some music to go out with, folks. And boy, do I feel the pressure here to pick a song. So I am going to take the advice of someone who posted that it would make sense if we posted a song that was relevant to Backlash in 2003. So you know what? Here is the number one song from April of 2003, according to somewhere I check online for this song, You Jerks. But I don't mind. Just wanna rock you, girl. I'll have whatever you have. Come on, let's give it a whirl. See, I've been watching you. And I like the way you move. So go ahead, girl, just do that ass shaking thing you do. So you grab your girls and you grab a couple more. And you all can meet me in the middle of a floor. So the air is thick, it's smelling right. So you pass to the left. Yeah.
This song so cool.